Good morning. I hope you're enjoying your Friday so far. You're listening to the Husky Nation News Show on WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. We've got the University of Connecticut's Need to Know News. Thanks to the WHUS News Team, UConn's own newspaper, The Daily Campus, and UConn's student-run TV station, UCTV. I'm your host, LJ Karam. Let's get started. Stay tuned to get the full scoop on everything that happened with the annual music festival, UConic. Today we start off our coverage with a story on Campus Clash, an event sponsored by the UConn chapter of Turning Point USA. Luke Hydash reported on it for UCTV. Charlie Kirk, the founder of Turning Point USA, along with conservative commentator Candace Owens and political talk show host Dave Rubin, all took the stage at the Student Union Theater on April 9th. According to UConn Turning Point USA president Joe Gotti, he said the point of their appearance was to spark respectful political discussion. However, the event inevitably sparked massive controversy from students who believed the only goal of the talk was to empower hate speech, and in response, a counter-event called Stand Against Islamophobia and the Other Far Right was held in Castleman at the same time. Next up, former computer science and engineering professor Jeffrey Munier formally resigned in January after an inquiry arose of a sexual relationship with a student. Luke Hydash reported on this for the Daily Campus. His resignation was the ultimate result of an inquiry by the Office of Institutional Equality, or OIE, that unearthed Munier's sexual relationship with an undergraduate student. He resigned on January 22, 2019, in an email sent to the mechanical engineering dean, Kazem Kazarunian. In an official statement, Munier specified that the person he entered into a relationship with was not an engineering student, was never in any of his classes, and his acquaintance with whom is unrelated to my employment at UConn. In emails obtained by the Daily Campus between Munier and Kazarunian, the latter wrote that the Office of Institutional Equality investigated and concluded that you violated the policy against discrimination, harassment, and related interpersonal violence when Munier failed to disclose his relationship with the undergraduate student. In an additional investigation described by Kazarunian, Munier was also found to have violated additional university policies by providing false and/or misleading information. Munier tendered his resignation prior to what would have been his eventual job termination and was warned by Kazarunian that appropriate action would be taken in connection to those pending proceedings conducted by the OIE in the event that Munier ever decided to return to any kind of state job. We now have an audio clip from a story written by WHUS's very, very lovely Maria Shah about efforts made by the Middle Eastern Student Association, aka MESA, to push for the creation of a Middle Eastern Cultural Center at the university. I highly recommend checking out the full story on our website, whus.org. Let's roll the tape!
My dad's actually a refugee. He fled Afghanistan in 1989. And he arrived in JFK, and like they knew right off the jump that his papers were not legitimate, so he sought political asylum like the second that he landed. And it went through a pretty arduous process to get refugee status. And then, I mean, I was 2 years old when 9/11 happened. I was like just about to turn 3, so in my whole mind, I have no recollection of a time where it was okay to be Afghan, but to be Muslim in the United States.
This is Suzanne Nasseri. Nasseri is many things, an Afghani-American woman, a political science and human rights double major, and a university scholar. However, what some may not know is that Nasseri is also the president of the Middle Eastern Students Association, or MESA for short.
So most of my life I was battling with like these kind of two identities, and I was resenting this country for what it was putting me through, and then I was resenting Afghanistan too, like why couldn't you have just sustained yourself? And then later on in my life, in 2015, we had like a really big loss in our family. So it was 8 of my cousins that were, their boat like flipped over and they all died. About like a week later, like my uncle passed away from heartbreak. It was a point in my life where I knew that I had an obligation to these people and to this community that like, there's like this term is called like birth privilege. So like I did nothing to be so privileged to be born in New York, you know? So I don't know, I always felt like, especially at that point in my life, like I knew that I needed to do something that like other families, other people didn't experience this pain.
Nasseri's tragic story was shocking, but unfortunately, it is a story of many Middle Eastern people around the world. However, this story is not about Nasseri. This story is about how the efforts of people like Nasseri may bring another cultural center to Yukon. There are 6 cultural centers at Yukon, and every cultural center has a story. They were born from an incident on campus that caused students to band together and demand a space on campus for their community. So then, what would a Middle Eastern cultural center mean for students? The Middle East includes regions of Western Asia and North Africa, and sometimes, due to the political associations with the term, parts of South Asia. Therefore, depending on the country one is from, they geographically may fall under the African American Cultural Center or the Asian American Cultural Center. Nasseri points out that due to the cultural differences, this is unfair to not only the Middle Eastern American community here at UConn, but to the African American and Asian American communities as well.
We picked up the initiative last fall, so we've so far met with the director of the Asian American Cultural Center and the African American Cultural Center. So, and oftentimes when we had these conversations about, okay, as someone from Afghanistan, yeah, I'm from Asia, but my culture is not Asian, and ASAC is often tasked with make events that include this population. Like, I don't think that's fair that as Asian students, like, their experience is compromised, their space is compromised, like, to make room for me. And, like, that's not right. Like, that's a space that's needed for them to celebrate their culture. And then same with the African American Culture Center, is that they're constantly criticized too, like, oh, what about North Africans? And that's also not for them. Like, that's a space to celebrate Black history and Black culture. So we immediately talked to those directors because we wanted to get their perspective, see if we have their support, and they were 100% for it. They're like, yes, we completely understand why you need your own space. We completely support it.
For WHUS News, I'm Maria Shaw.
I now have the pleasure of busting into the story that has been on everyone's minds and social media feeds for the past few weeks. It's all about UConic, the spring music festival run by Subog, specifically regarding artist Sean Kingston. There had been controversy about his performance ever since it was revealed that in 2010, Kingston settled a lawsuit involving a gang rape allegation made by a 19-year-old girl against the singer, his bodyguard, and a member of his band. This is a lot to get through, and there are a lot of moving parts. So first, we're going to start with an article written by the Daily Campus's Ashley Anglizano on WHUS's own decision to cancel their UConic collaboration. WHUS Radio had originally planned to run a lounge at the music festival, but on Tuesday, April 9th, the organization released an official statement saying that, in light of the allegations made against one of the booked performers at UConic Music Festival, WHUS Radio has decided to no longer participate in the evening's events as it does not align with our values. WHUS also mentioned in the statement that they are still open to working with Subog on future projects and that they wish them all the best. A UConn student group, Revolution Against Rape, lauded the radio station for their choice. They also criticized Subog's choice to book Kingston, as it ran contrary to their goal of best serving university students. In their statement, the group says that Kingston's booking tells victim survivors across Connecticut that this university values a performance more than their safety. Subog did make the decision to cancel Sean Kingston's appearance at UConn. Alex Hudeschel wrote about it for the Daily Campus. Subog provided full refunds to all students who bought tickets for the event. There was also initially a distinction between floor, upper level, and lower level tickets, but that distinction was rescinded and any ticket holder gained the ability to visit whichever part of the seating they wished. Another UConic opener, Summer Walker, was unable to perform due to travel issues. Subog revealed these lineup changes along with an apology via their social media accounts. Subog expressed their regret at disappointing students and pledged their commitment to learning from this experience as we move forward. Another statement written in conjunction with UConn's other Tier 3 organizations was released that day on Twitter. Tier 3 organizations issued not only their support for Subog's decision, but also a condemnation of Kingston's alleged actions. In this official statement, these organizations stated that, "We all stand with and believe survivors of sexual assault and condemn those who do not support survivors of sexual assault." Furthermore, the statement also read, "Tier 3 organizations do not support or endorse any of the alleged actions that Sean Kingston has been accused of, nor do his actions represent us." Subog Concert Chair Jason Stockman says that the organization was unaware of the allegations against Kingston prior to the decision to book him, and that if they had been privy to that information, then they most definitely would not have considered him as an option to open the second Uconic Music Festival. This decision may have potential repercussions in the future for both Uconic and for Subog, but Stockman says that the decision had to be made. In another Daily Campus article, Rachel Phillipson wrote about student reaction to Subog's choice. The official statement on the fate of Sean Kingston's performance was not released until about an hour before doors to Uconic were opened. Many students were upset that the official announcement had not been made sooner, leaving many rumors to propagate in its vacuum. However, the decision itself was welcomed with support by students featured in the article. Finally, to wrap up our coverage, we have a recent update on how other colleges who are part of Kingston's tour are responding to the events here at UConn. Gabriella DeBenedictis of the Daily Campus wrote about Fordham University students and their push to cancel Kingston's performance at their own school. Kingston is slated to be the headliner at Fordham's own spring concert, but a movement calling for his removal is gaining traction on Instagram under the handle Students Against Sean. According to the Fordham Observer, the account itself is run by a group of six students. One of these students is Emily Mueller, who gave a speech decrying Kingston to a group that included not only Fordham's Student Life Council, but also university administrators and deans. The movement at Fordham is co-signed by their United Student Government, which released a statement calling for the removal of Kingston from the spring concert lineup. The performance is slated to take place on April 27th. Now, before we head into our PSA pause, I have a quick weather report. Today, it's cloudy with a high chance of rain this afternoon. Aww. On Saturday, it's looking like rain showers with a possible thunderstorm. And on Sunday, surprise again, it looks like we might see rain again before noon. All weekend long, it's predicted the high will be in the low 60s. Stay tuned after the break for our discussion section, where I've got a very special guest in the studio with me for my last show as a Husky Nation news host.
Welcome to Husky Nation News.
We've got the University of Connecticut's need-to-know news.
We'll now be moving into the talk portion of our news show.
I wanted to start a newspaper, and so I did.
I'm really focused on comfort of the patient.
I'm originally from Northern Ireland, which is a country
How many Pop-Tarts?
Bienvenidos a nuestro.
Like, if you were to go
there. Yeah. And you are listening to WHUS Stores 91.7 FM.
And we're back. As promised, we're going to be moving on to the talk portion of the show. But as a disclaimer, please note that from this point forward, the views and opinions expressed on this Husky Nation news broadcast are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily the views of the staff, management, or licensee of WHUS Radio or the University of Connecticut. In the studio with me, I have a very dear friend, the spectacular Jeff Horvath.
Hello, thank you for having me.
He's here to sit with me for a hot minute to talk about Game of Thrones. But beware, for the night is dark and full of spoilers. Is this a backdoor pilot to my Game of Thrones podcast? Who knows?
Stay tuned to find out.
Anyways, hey, Jeff.
Hello.
Okay, so.
You're
Jeff.
Myself.
And we watched the Game of Thrones premiere together. We were in the same vicinity. Same room. You were right next to me. Kara was sitting in between us. I'm going to see how much time we have left to talk about this. Okay, good. We have like a good 15 minutes to talk about this. Perfect. I'm excited. So you, I remember, said earlier that the previous season had been like kind of a letdown for you.
Garbage. Yeah.
Okay.
No, I hated the last. I really thought season 7 was atrocious. I've been a big fan of Game of Thrones for a long time. Read the books before I started watching the show.
Well,
in freshman year of high school, I think. So
okay.
8 years of my life to have been occupied by Game of Thrones. And that's, like, one thing that, like, with, like, television is far and away my favorite medium, like, more than, like, books or movies or anything. I just think that television is a lot more intimate. You know, you, like, these characters, like, come into your house and you, like, learn about them.
Okay.
For 8 years.
That's really precious. 8 years. It's really precious.
You know, yeah, that's, like, significant. Like, you
precious,
read a book in a week.
Pushed by Sapphire.
You read a book in a week. You rewatch a movie in 2 hours. But Game of Thrones has been, what, like 60 episodes over the past 8 years?
Yeah.
So it's big. But ever since I'm not one of those people that says, like, oh, the Game of Thrones books did it better, because there were so many times in the early seasons, like mostly 1 through 4 or 5 sometimes, where the show really pushed the envelope and did a lot that the book had done, but did it better, honestly, I thought. But as soon as they lost that reference material they had...
Oh, yes!
I don't think they really knew what to do.
Yeah, they kind of were flying by the seat of their pants.
Yeah, they didn't really know the concept of geography.
time travel, Littlefinger and his jetpack?
Yeah, no, that was one of my main gripes with Season 7, was that there was such a lack of tension.
Yeah.
Because by the second or third episode of the season, I was like, nothing negative is going to happen to any of these characters. They've just taken it, like, if they're in danger, they'll get saved by a time trap, by a super fast traveling dragon that can, just, I don't know, fast travel like a video game.
Because at times I've felt that the show has been, like, kind of slow. Like, it's been slogging through things. But then how can certain things happen so quickly, but make the payoff
you have
isn't
to be
the same?
Consistent.
It's not good.
You can't, like, the first four seasons were so focused on the fact that people and information travels really slowly.
A raven.
And, yeah,
a raven,
it travels by
your
a raven.
Grace.
So people are doing things and reacting to things that have been fixed or, like, new things have happened, but they're reacting so late because things took so long to percolate. But instead, in season 7, we just got Daenerys teleporting north of the wall and saving the day, and I was befuddled, to say the least.
Annoying.
But
don't get me wrong, I love Game of Thrones.
I love Game of Thrones.
I love Game of Thrones.
I will always love it, but it's just, and it's bitter, and it's bittersweet too, because, like, it's coming to an end before the books, which is a little bitter. It's, like, a little odd, it's a little foreign, because for so long it was like, I knew what was going to happen. Let's see how they do it.
Yeah.
But now it's like, okay, I don't know what's going to happen, but let's see if they can do it well.
Fair.
So,
my question to you. Actually, I have a couple, but this is, like, which Stark out of the surviving ones? Sorry about the spoilers. I have a friend who's like, don't spoil it. And I go, oh, like, you haven't seen the premiere yet? He's like, no, I'm on season 4. I'm so sorry. So, out of the surviving Starks, we're still factoring Bran in as a Stark, despite the fact that he's a three-eyed raven.
He's
Bran,
a vegetable, basically.
He's essentially a vegetable who just, like, creeps people
vegetable out. Isaac Hempstead White probably
Bran Stark.
Isn't even there. They probably just have, like, a mannequin of him.
Yeah.
Because he's really pulling off the dead eyes perfectly.
No, it's crazy. So, out of Bran, Arya, Sansa, Jon Stark. Mm-hmm. I'm doing quotation marks. You can't see that. Marks. Jeff can see that. So, which one do you think is the most likely to, like, kind of come out of this and, you know,
alive,
be part of this new world?
Oh, thank God that you said that instead of...
Who's going to win the Game of Thrones?
If anybody ever again asked me, who do you think is going to win the Game of Thrones? It's not Survivor. It's not Big Brother.
You're on out of the house.
Like, I went on Reddit one day and I was faced with a poll that says, who do you think is going to win the Game of Thrones? I was like, that's not the idea of the show. It wasn't started as a reality competition just in a medieval world. That's not what it's about.
I guarantee you, Jon Snow does not care about who's going to win the Game
does
of Thrones. He's
care.
Like,
no.
Are we going to be alive after
this? That's what a lot of them have come. And,
but
in terms of, like, who's going to actually be alive,
like, most likely,
I think Arya, just because
really
I think she's
okay,
one, losing her grip on reality,
fair,
two,
very fair,
just not being a part of civilization as it stands anyway. I really think she's pretty disconnected.
She's off the grid.
She's very off the grid, And I just think she's tenacious just as a character. I just think she's she's already survived so much that I don't know. I don't really see there being much that she can't, not necessarily survive, but not, I don't think there's much that she can't escape from.
Okay.
I think she's more of an escape artist than really anything else.
Arya is a mime.
Arya's David Blaine. Yeah.
Oh, Arya Stark Houdini. Is Chris Angel. Mind freak. Okay, so my money is on Sansa.
True, I think Sansa I just think she's too connected to the world as it is. Like, when you're, you said, like, who comes out into this, like, new world, this new civilization, I think Sansa is, within the context of this world, one of the most powerful and, like, strongest characters. But in context of, like, moving forward into a new society, I don't know how she would be able to adjust.
Yeah, Arya's more adaptable. I definitely agree with that. So, that's, because it's definitely not, I mean, Bran, there's a theory that, like, Bran is the Night King.
I heard something about that.
It seems strange to me, like, from the supplementary, like, podcasts and whatever, like, YouTube videos that I've watched, a lot of people, like, really believe that if that would, there are ways that they could do it where it would not, like, completely damage the narrative of the story. Because the point of the Game of Thrones, like, arc, like, the story, is that these characters are, like, responsible for their own decisions. And, like, everything that happens is based on decisions that the characters make. If you turn Bran into the Night King, you're basically saying that, like, none of any of this matters.
Mattered in the first place. Yeah, no, that would be very, like, Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's I've never even seen Battlestar Galactica, but I know the entire ending. I can't believe there's reference to that, but...
Wow, impressive. Also, there's a theory relating back to Arya that I've seen where there's potential for her to use Littlefinger's face and go try to, like, trick Cersei. Or, like, because you know Arya has a weirdly strong commitment to trying to kill Cersei. I don't think Arya's going to be the one to kill Cersei. I think it's going to be Jaime. At least I hope it will.
Yeah.
Like, Brienne dies in some fiery battle. Jaime gets mad at Cersei because she didn't bring her army. Jaime goes kill Cersei. She was, yeah.
Just, like, in the background.
She was, yeah. She didn't.
Gwyneth.
Oh, I can't wait.
Gwyneth, isn't the actress's name?
Gwendolyn Christie.
Gwendolyn.
Yeah, Gwendolyn Christie.
Rogue name.
Oh my god, I can't wait for her and Jaime. Just, I'm so excited. I just want them to say, like, hello to each other and be like, I was wrong. They were like, no, I was wrong. And then just fall in love.
I'm not. Some of the what's the word? Rendezvous. Regrouping, re-meeting.
Reunions?
Reunion. That's the term I was looking for. Rendezvous. I like that. The rendezvous in the premiere were kind of corny. The Hound, I don't know, should have.
I thought the Hound one was actually kind of funny.
I like the Gendry and Arya one. That one was a little bit more.
You don't know any rich other rich girls.
They were, the two of them have infinitely more chemistry than Jon and Daenerys.
Oh my god. Don't even get me started.
Daenerys and Jon are the weird couple.
They are.
They're the weird couple. Like, there was just
not only
so
is there an incest element to it.
I'm in the context of the show a little bit more used to that than just them being weird together. Like, there's already been enough
that's
incest.
That's so true.
In terms of the show, they're like one of the more remote familial connections.
Also, they didn't
We've already seen brother and sister doing
it. Like, Jaime and Cersei came out of the womb together, and they are fully aware of that fact. They're fully aware of the fact that that's what they're engaging in.
They just didn't happen to know, and they don't look anything alike. How would they expect it? But, no, it's really, that doesn't bug me as much as just the fact that they just are weird. There's so many shots of them just, like, petting each other.
Well,
and
so,
just, like, stop it.
Here's the thing. Because I said a disclaimer and the thing, I'm allowed to say this. So did you read the article in the New Yorker that Amelia Clark wrote about how she had, like, brain aneurysms?
Yes.
So for those of you who don't know, Amelia Clark, the actress who plays Daenerys Targaryen in Game of Thrones, had, I think,
between seasons 2 and 3 or something, right?
One and two. She had two brain aneurysms, like two strokes. And she straight up thought she was going to die. And some part of me thinks that her facial expressions and her acting, which is something that I find that people criticize often.
Yeah.
Those may be limited due to her 100%. Having the stroke.
I completely agree.
The same thing happened to Aubrey Plaza when she was in college. Yeah. She also had a stroke and it gave
her
like
so deadpan.
Exactly. But it works for her because that's,
because
like
that's
her line
comedy,
of
yeah.
work. Yeah.
With Emilia Clarke, she has to be kind of an, more of an expressive actress.
Yeah.
Where she falls a bit short. But, I mean, given her background with that, it's a bit unfair to criticize. But it's not even really her face.
There's something that just seems like I mean, also, Aubrey Plaza, and I think to a certain extent, Emilia Clarke had, like, expressive aphasia.
Yeah. That's the word.
Again, Aubrey Plaza, it works because it revamped her comedic timing.
Yeah. With Emilia Clarke, it's
Emilia Clarke
just...
is something different.
But she was on SNL, right? She was on SNL a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And she was good. She was on SNL when Kit Harington just hosted. She, like, popped up for a moment and
wonderful.
She was nice there.
Wow.
Wasn't the best SNL, but... also, can we talk about the...
4 minutes left, so...
Can we talk about the... dragon scene and how it was a shot-for-shot remake of the hippogriff scene from Harry Potter.
Oh, I was going to go Never-Ending Story.
Oh, I saw that and I was expecting to see Harry Potter standing
on
top
of
the hippogriff as it flies over the lake. I was dumbfounded.
Oh my God, you're right.
The audacity to make that scene.
I listened to a podcast the other day.
5 minutes long.
Where one of the guys who's on the podcast is Jason Mantzoukas, an actor who's in Brooklyn Nine-Nine,
yes.
The Good Place, whatever. Yeah. He's a huge Harry Potter fan, but he also loves Game of Thrones. He made direct reference to them like cutting that scene from Harry Potter 3.
It was just shopped. They didn't really refilm anything.
Yeah.
They just reused it.
Also, the place where they went, the waterfall place. Apparently,
Iceland.
According to... I don't think it's in Iceland.
It looked exactly like a place I've
been. According to like some behind-the-scenes featurette that was referenced in a podcast I listened to the other day, they used budget, made them fly to some weird exotic place, and also David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, the double Ds, were like, you should also CGI like 3 waterfalls into that scene to make it look like better. But no ghost. No ghost. They did not put ghost anywhere.
That's,
we haven't seen ghost for a whole season.
Odd usage of the budget.
It was very strange. The payoff of that, I thought it would be better. Jon's riding a dragon. Only Targaryens can ride dragons. And it's bonded to him forever. If Jon and Dany have a rift,
that
dragon goes with Jon.
My favorite thing of this episode was just... In a weird way, it was how unsubtle it was.
Oh, so
like,
heavy.
It felt like it hit
me over the head with
but
a hammer.
The reason that was my favorite thing was because it's so funny seeing the reactions of all the bloggers in the week since.
Yeah.
They don't know what to write.
Nope.
It's hilarious. Stunned. I saw one that was like, 12 things you might not have noticed in the Game of Thrones premiere. Unless you watch the entire series
this
while
crumb on Arya's
with
chin.
Your eyes closed and headphones in, you could put like the dots together in that premiere. Their number one thing you might have missed was there was a hole in the wall in the intro. Unless you were out of the room for the intro, which is a mortal sin, you would have noticed that they spent 15 seconds zooming it. Like there was just no subtlety in the plot.
Yeah.
But it was kind of better than the season past, but
it.
Yeah.
Again, we're one episode in.
We have how many to go? I'm just
6?
A little nervous.
Five more.
I'm just a little nervous, but...
Okay.
Have you heard the new Game of Thrones album, Power is Power?
You want to talk about this? I have no idea what's going on, so...
I thought it was a joke. My brother sent me the link on Instagram, and I thought it was a meme. I thought it was going to be something from The Onion. No, it's real. They have a Game of Thrones album coming out featuring Ellie Goulding, SZA, Travis Scott, ASAP Rocky... I just don't even... It sounds like something that YouTubers would do in, like, 2012. Like, make a Game of Thrones album. Like, where's Jenna Marbles and Shane Dawson? It's absurd that somebody actually let that happen in the music industry. LJ has no comment.
He looked at my face. I have nothing to say to that.
I don't even really know... What
they're trying to copy like the Black Panther soundtrack,
exactly
that whole vibe.
It is. Exactly.
It's not
going to
work.
Is.
It's not the same thing.
It's
nope.
not the same thing. And SZA, you should have known better. Jumping ship like that. I'm disappointed. Because that was her with Kendrick Lamar, right? It was Kendrick Lamar and SZA.
Yes.
That was a great song.
All the stars.
That was a great song. And then Power is Power with The Weeknd. Not a great song. Nah.
Imagine The Weeknd cosplaying as Cersei. All right,
why
so
Cersei?
I don't know. Power is power. That's what she said. That's her thing, right?
Yeah, that's her line.
Okay.
But I don't like that view. That's
yeah. Fine. So sadly, we have run out of time.
Oh,
but
tragic.
Luckily, Jeff lives above me in my apartment building, so we're gonna talk about this a lot more. Don't worry about it.
I'll play Power is Power for you.
Oh, God, please don't. All right, so I want to say a quick thank you to the Daily Campus and to UCTV for collaborating with us, and a big shout-out to Ethan Smith, the creator of our intro music. I've had an absolutely wonderful time being your host today. I'm LJ Karam, and I believe that everyone should invest in some form of aromatherapy. Seriously, it'll change your life. You're listening to WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. Signing off one last time. Aww. Go do some fun stuff this weekend. Bye.